Wells. Welcome to Mound Money on KPCW.
The interaction between corporations and government is certainly not new. In a speech delivered in 1900, Senator Lindsay of Kentucky warned of citizen complaints that, quote, corporations not content with the extraordinary and dangerous control they exercise in the affairs of business have become customary participants in political contexts. Fast forward to 2010, when the Supreme Court handed down the Citizens United decision, holding that campaign finance law restrictions prohibiting independent political expenditures by corporations and unions violated the First Amendment's protection of free speech.
Another Kentucky senator that almost all of us know, Mitch McConnell, commended the decision, arguing that it represented an important step in the direction of restoring the First Amendment rights. But on April 5th of this year, after Major League Baseball pulled the All-Star game out of Atlanta in response to the passage of a new Georgia voting law, Mitch McConnell said, "So my warning, if you will, to corporate America is to stay out of politics. It's not what you're designed to do. It's not what you're designed for." Nonetheless, the following weekend, CEOs and corporate leaders from over 100 companies joined on a conference call on a Saturday to talk about potential ways to show they oppose this legislation, including by halting donations to politicians who supported the bill and even delaying investments in states that passed similar restrictive measures.
Historically, it appears that corporate political activity tended to align closely with specific economic interests tied to the corporation's business activity. That certainly appears to be changing. So what's motivating the change and how significant is it? How does it fit within the broader context of the issue of corporate responsibility? We're fortunate today to be joined by Professor Trevor Fetter, who's now a senior lecturer at the Harvard Business School following a distinguished career in corporate America. Trevor, good morning and welcome to Mountain Money.
Hi, Roger. Thanks for having me today.
It's always a pleasure. Can you share with us some observations about how major corporations have approached the political sphere in the past? Am I right that it was traditionally tied tightly to specific economics?
Yeah, you're right, and look, this is a fascinating topic, and it's evolving. So I think if you want to start with a little bit of history, we should probably go back to 1970 when Milton Friedman, the famous economist, wrote an essay in which he defined the purpose of a corporation by saying there's one and only social responsibility of business to use its resources and engage in activities designed to increase its profits so long as it stays within the rules of the game, which is to say, engages in open and free competition without deception or fraud. And I would say that, you know, for most of recent history, corporate engagement in politics was exactly around that objective, to shape the rules of the game, you know, for your particular industry. And Republicans generally favored less regulation and lower taxes. Democrats favored large social programs, you know, like healthcare, so that was very relevant, and higher taxes. But that wasn't always the case, and remember, under the George W. Bush administration, you had a massive expansion of Medicare, the Part D drug benefit, which was pushed, you know, enormously by the pharma industry. And you mentioned Citizens United in 2010, so that was a turning point that essentially, you know, removed limits on corporate engagement in politics. I just would also add, historically, this has not been a Republican or a Democrat thing. You know, both parties love corporate support as long as their positions are aligned. And what's fascinating now, that Mitch McConnell, you know, quote that you had just a minute ago, was the reaction of Senator McConnell to say, wait a minute, now stay out, you know, when this is, we're talking about an issue that he is not particularly aligned with.
So talk to us about Citizen United and the benefit. You could argue that the benefit and the negative parts of Citizen United inure equally to both parties. Has that been the case, or what does the data show?
Yeah, no, it absolutely both parties. So, look, as I mentioned, historically you would see more alignment between business and Republicans because of that, you know, general principle of less regulation and lower taxes. But today, because virtually everything has become politicized and virtually everything is polarized, you have companies, you know, getting engaged in different topics that are less directly related to the, you know, specific economics around their particular industries or companies. And what Citizens United really changed was the range of engagement that companies can have. So the engagement, can take many forms. You can have direct contributions of corporate money to campaigns or to, organizations that support particular positions, political action committees, super PACs, 501c4 social welfare organizations. You can employ lobbyists, consultants, it goes on and on, the amount of engagement and the forms of engagement.
Let's go back to the Milton Friedman article, because I think that really is a seminal piece in corporate philosophy that spoke to really the notion that the corporation exists to fulfill the needs of one stakeholder, the shareholder. I assume there's been academic and other pushback on that since then. Can you talk a little bit about the countervailing pressures to look at the views of other stakeholders?
Well, a real watershed moment in this debate occurred in 2019 when the Business Roundtable, which is an organization comprised of the CEOs, roughly 200 CEOs of the largest corporations based in America, BRT in the fall of 2019 came out with a new statement of purpose, the purpose of the corporation, saying that the purpose must be to benefit all stakeholders, and they listed in order customers, employees, suppliers, communities, and shareholders. And they essentially said without a vibrant American economy that supports all of those stakeholders, shareholders won't benefit. And by people who watch these things, that was considered, a major turning point in the sentiment of American business. Now, not every CEO signed on, so there were some notable exceptions, like General Electric. But 181 of the CEOs of the largest companies in America, signed this statement. And there's been a lot of, debate and study since then about whether they are actually walking the talk or not. But just even making that statement and putting, listing shareholders last in that, order was a major change from, prior orthodoxy.
And Trevor, one of the things you do, you're a lecturer at Harvard Business School, and you teach a class on social responsibility. Talk to us about that and the importance of that to our generation, as well as to the younger generation of students you're teaching.
Well, so the course is actually Leadership and Corporate Accountability, and it has a component of ethics, the law, and economics, and it essentially illustrates that corporations and leaders of corporations face very difficult decisions when the interests of these different stakeholders either collide or are in conflict, or just, often as a CEO of a corporation, you are faced with difficult decisions for which there is no good answer. I would say generationally, the younger generation, the upcoming, business leaders are more engaged in the, stakeholder point of view. In fact, many companies, I think, are feeling pressure from their employees and from their customers to take, positions that they would never have heard from employees or customers, decades earlier. So there is a generational shift taking place. Also, the public, just in general, wants to hear from CEOs and from business. An interesting and influential survey that's done every year by the PR firm Edelman on the subject of trust in business. In the 2020 survey, and this is of tens of thousands of people around the world, 86% say that CEOs should speak out on social issues. That's an extraordinarily high number. 68%, which is still very high, say that CEOs should actually step in to fix societal issues when government can't or won't. And this follows these kind of startling numbers follow a trend over time in which people expect more out of corporations in terms of their expression of what their own values are. And in part, that is because of another finding in the survey, which relates to trust, in which business generically is compared against government, media, and non-governmental organizations on two dimensions. One is ethics, and the other one is competence. And business is actually the only one of those four institutions that is viewed as both ethical, Now, you know, barely. It's barely above the halfway point in the survey, but still, that's big. You know, it's viewed as ethical and competent. Government is viewed as unethical and incompetent. So people, you know, are relying on business to, you know, to make statements and actually fix issues. And it becomes much more intense when it is local. So if you ask about business in general, you get one answer. When you ask about your business, the company, you know, by whom you are employed, and your CEO, the trust factor and the competence factor goes up.
Let's talk a little bit about the recent commotion surrounding voter election law changes. And without dealing with the merits at all, I want to talk about the kinds of pressures that companies like Delta and Coca-Cola in Georgia or American Airlines in Texas have come under. And, you know, you have a unique perspective, having obviously been in lots of boardrooms. What do you think those discussions were like in those boardrooms about how to deal with those issues?
Well, okay, so it's actually interesting. One of the findings of a survey that was done right after the Business Roundtable issued its statement actually looked at whether boards of directors had approved the CEO's signing, you know, this statement of purpose. And it concluded that in most cases, the boards had not been engaged. And I think that after that came out, boards became more engaged in this question. What I think is fascinating about this one, Roger, is that the you know, if you were engaging in an issue that was directly related to your bottom line, nobody cares. They expect you to do that. And, you know, if you had kind of a spectrum of issues where there are some on which they're not very polarizing, others which are very polarizing, relevant to the bottom line being the other dimension, you know, not so relevant, highly relevant, everyone expects people to engage constantly in issues that are highly relevant to their bottom line and, you know, not terribly polarizing. If they become more polarizing, then, you know, the companies start to think harder about it. And so you look at something like voting rights, and it's hard to argue that there's an impact on the bottom line, except for the fact, and look, I was involved in these kinds of arguments around bathroom bills, where the climate of the state in which you're operating, it matters. It matters for recruitment of talent and retention of talent. It matters for events like the Major League Baseball that can be played anywhere. So I think when this issue, when the Georgia issue occurred, it was in the wake of January 6th and the Capitol riots. It also occurred at a time when a group, 72 black executives, were seeking support by corporations all over the country to support them in a campaign relating to these kinds of voter laws. And so all of this converged at a point in time. And to your point, companies that were headquartered in Georgia, like Delta and Coke, became under enormous pressure, where silence, you know, became equated with complicity. And so companies felt compelled to make some kind of statement and take position on the issues. And they handled it, each company handled it very differently.
So there's different sources of power to influence change. One is CEOs and boards of these very large companies, very large employers that have ripple effects, and they can make very strong statements. Another strong statement can be made by the investment world. And I believe BlackRock is the world's largest money manager. They manage money. My firm manages money in the billions. They manage money in the trillions. And the CEO of BlackRock has come out, Larry Fink, has come out and said that social responsibility is very important, a very important factor as his analysts are looking at which companies to invest in. I know you're on the board of a financial advisory firm as well. Is that a trend? Is that a evolution that you applaud, or is there a cautionary piece to that that we should know about?
Well, I think the issue you're referring to is known as ESG, environmental, social, and governance factors, and it has also come to an interesting head recently in the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, and Warren Buffett made comments that are essentially critical of what BlackRock and other firms are doing. But basically, it's BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. Those are the big three, and they hold, you know, shares cumulatively, and it depends on the company, but it can be 15 to 20%, you know, of a large publicly traded company. And so, and they don't have a lot of choice about what they hold, because to the extent that they're managing index funds, those in, you know, if you're in the S&P 500, they could like or hate the company. They've got to own it in order to track the fund. So how do they, you know, engage in influencing their portfolio holdings? And I think this ESG trend has essentially said, look, well, we can engage as permanent shareholders who can't really, you know, vote with our feet on companies. We can engage on the way you're governed and the impact that you have on the environment and the social policies that you have. So, for example, you know, do you pay women the same as men for performing the same job? We want to know that. We want to know how diverse your workforces are. These are the kinds of engagements that they are having with companies. And so to explain what they do, every year these firms send letters to corporations and to the board chairs of corporations saying, look, this year we're going to focus on this particular topic. So in the summer of 2020, State Street, for example, sent a letter to, I think it was 5,000 publicly traded companies saying, this year when we engage with you, we will want to talk about board diversity. And, you know, you'll have some explaining to do if you don't have a board that, you know, represents some level of diversity. These topics, you know, change with time and with the circumstance of the company. So companies that have a high environmental impact are probably going to draw more attention on the E in ESG. Companies with large workforces will draw more attention on the S. And, you know, governance, the G, really is around shareholder rights and shareholder democracy. This is, in a way, not terribly new. It's just become, you know, really ubiquitous with the prevalence of index investing and the massive accumulation of assets that has occurred within, you know, pension plans and, you know, other institutional investor types.
You know, earlier in our conversation, we talked about how some sort of positions taken by corporations are not controversial because they are core to their, you know, their business. Corporations obviously engage in a lot of PAC, political action committee activity. Are we going to see increasing scrutiny on who corporations are giving to and what positions those politicians have taken on non-core business issues in this new environment? Is that going to be sort of a new focus by the public?
I think it is. When you have a polarized public that's hyperactive in politics, they will scrutinize everything that occurs. There was a very famous case a few years ago involving a, you know, bathroom bill in which Target actually triggered a boycott. Target had had a very, you know, progressive stance on the issue, but they had also made a very small contribution to a politician in Minnesota who, and in fact, it was indirect, but this politician had made some outrageous statements that triggered a massive backlash, which really literally led to a boycott. So I think you're going to see boycotts. Mitch McConnell has said that there will be repercussions, you know, for companies doing this. Rick Scott, Senator Rick Scott from Florida, a former large corporation CEO himself, wrote an open letter to what he called woke corporate America, saying, you know, beware of the backlash that's coming. And, you know, hope you're having fun with your virtue signaling, it said. And it went on to actually reference the Georgia law. And he called out Delta Airlines and said, you require, you know, ID to get on one of your planes. You know, what's wrong with requiring ID to vote? So this looks like war, you know, that is coming. And it's very surprising after, you know, decades of a tight relationship between the Republican Party and business that you actually have leading Republican politicians, you know, threatening this backlash to companies for getting involved in politics.
And in war, there's always unintended consequences. There's always victims that were not directly involved, but unfortunately become collateral damages. As you look at the dangers of how things are escalating now, what are some cautions that we should be thinking about?
I think, do we really want a world in which you align yourself with corporations based on their political positions? So you could imagine that in different industries, you would have companies that drew boycotts from one side or another, or drew tremendous customer loyalty from one side or another, or places where employees with particular political beliefs didn't feel comfortable working, or they felt incredibly comfortable working. This is, unfortunately, somewhat of a consequence of our polarized society, but you could envision companies kind of moving into different corners, maybe initially out of principle or out of seeking some kind of advantage, but this is, it's not hard to imagine that you end up with companies reflecting our different political divides.
We've been talking with Trevor Fetter. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.